Welcome to the Airport Lounge. I'm your host, Airport. This podcast, like the content I read on Twitter, is aimed at providing deeper insights into all things Web3, including the stories of prominent figures, builders, and community members generally operating in this space. My guest today is Ellie Steinbach. Ellie is a crypto veteran and has a very extensive resume of work that he's done in this space. He's the founder of several NFT or NFT-related projects and is one of the creators of ERC-721-R, an ERC-721 contract standard that incorporates the option for NFT holders to automatically process a refund for their NFT. I'd also like to thank Origins NFT for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. Origins is a data analytics platform and community of NFT traders that I've been a part of since my time entering the Web3 and NFT communities. Owning an Origins NFT pass gives access to the closed Discord, which houses various data and alert tools, threads for in-depth discussions on projects, and in-depth write-ups from community analysts, including myself, for long-term calls and projects we're bullish on. Anyone who's followed me on Twitter for some length of time will have seen me post the occasional Origins chart together with some analysis. I often credit a lot of what I know and understand about markets and data-driven analytics to the Origins community, and truly, navigating the space is made a lot easier with a community of like-minded individuals. I've been a vocal supporter of Origins NFT for the longest time prior to sponsorship of the podcast, and I encourage everyone who's still looking for a community to navigate this space with to pop into the server, have a chat with me or any of the mods in the comments channel, and have a look around. And without further ado, let's hop into this week's episode with Ellie Steinbach.
Yeah, nice. That's an excellent little thing. The recording started. Ellie, thank you very much for coming on the podcast. How are you doing, man?
Yeah, good. How are you?
Good. So we have a number of things that, you know, I think it's actually a really good time to talk about a lot of these things. And, you know, especially I think in the bear market when people are sort of reevaluating and sort of learning and thinking about things, I think a lot of interesting takes that'll come out of this. But why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself first and you know, describe how you got into this space and sort of what you're working on.
Yeah, for sure. So I got into the space I got into crypto in, like, I guess 2017, 18, and very shortly afterwards, I got into the NFT space. CryptoKitties was around end of 2017. I saw what was happening. My background is as a developer. I have a computer science degree. I'm a full stack developer. And what was happening in Ethereum was sort of very interesting to me at the time, that you could write code on the blockchain, you'd have this MetaMask, you had cash in the browser. The whole thing was sort of like quite novel and a bit crazy. And I was sort of like online collecting cats, breeding them, selling them on. And I thought what was happening was quite interesting. And I basically told some friends, you know, I was in a co-working space, we were sort of like coming to the end of something else we were working on. I was running another startup. It was very difficult to monetize. I convinced a few friends that we should go build something similar to CryptoKitties called Crypto Fighters. This is, yeah, end of around December 2017 time, basically. And the basic concept in CryptoKitties, you could take two cats of your own and go breed them and create a new cat. In Crypto Fighters, we thought, instead of taking two of your own cats, you would collect your own fighters. And if you won a battle, then you would actually be able to, the reward would be a newly minted fighter. So I guess like a very, very early version of what we call like play to earn today. Crypto Fighters is probably one of the first ever play to earn games on Ethereum. That we sort of put that out at the time. It took us around 6 weeks, I think, to build the initial version. We had artists and so on doing the initial work. And we put that out back then. Our roadmap was quite small at the time as well. OpenSea was just starting out. We were one of the first ever projects on OpenSea. Sort of the CEO even put us on directly. But because OpenSea wasn't really a thing, you had to build your own marketplace at the time. So we did that. The roadmap there was basically to build like that mini game I just described, where you would battle fighters and win a new fighter if you won the battle. So that was the roadmap at the time. That we implemented around a month later. So around February, end of February 2018 is when that came out. And yeah, that was sort of my entrance into the world of NFTs. Next 3 years was sort of just complete silence, basically. Like, personally, never thought NFTs would ever come back. Never thought sort of there would be a revival to Crypto Fighters. And then in 2021, I guess, around March-ish time, obviously NBA Top Shot and everything starts coming back. Crypto Fighters starts getting attention because it's a historical project. Over the course of the last year or so, it's had over 1,000 ETH in volume. So that's sort of my entrance into NFTs. Happy to speak a bit more about that. Over the last year, I've like been quite heavily involved in the space. But 2018 is sort of when I made my first entrance into the NFT space.
Yeah, that's amazing. And so I remember we had a brief chat, obviously, before, you know, we scheduled in the podcast and everything, but just on Crypto Fighters. So you said that this was a project that, you know, obviously you guys launched at the time in 2017. And, you know, it's sort of been recently revived and still minting now. So, I mean, just a bit more color, I guess, around how all of that played out would be great.
Yeah, so the original team had six team members on it. The team honestly was like super, super talented. Some of them have gone on, like, I mean, honestly, everyone has been like really successful since and gone on mm-hmm. to do amazing things. One person even runs a $12 billion company today, like that he founded wow. after Crypto Fighters, like the CEO of that company. So it's like really, really crazy. And everyone's done like very good things. CTOs of different companies, everyone's done impressive things. But because of that, it was obviously very difficult to sort of bring that original team back together, the six core team members. And so, yeah, like when like Crypto Fight, like we, me and my partner, Avi, another founder from Crypto Fighters, we did actually maintain it over the years, even 2019, 2020, when like sort of just NFTs were nothing, there was almost no trading on the platform. But there was still sort of like the occasional message, hey, this isn't working. Like you sort of need to restart a server. You need to fix this. Mm-hmm. You know, we're like, you're tracking the blockchain. Things aren't working. Like things are out of sync. So those changes, we always made sure to keep them working, even though I never really thought it would come back how it did. But yeah, the site was always up. The marketplace was always up. But one of the challenges we basically faced, like coming into 2021, even though we're a project with like decently good volume, like a few million dollars in volume total, across 2021, it was very challenging. Like sort of we didn't have any dedicated team members. I was running sort of my own freelance agency. Avi, who was somewhat involved, he was a CTO of a cyber startup, mm-hmm. Founder and CTO of that company. We were the most involved. Then everyone else was sort of like really like just not involved at all, basically, just because they were too busy with the other things they were working on. But yeah, we sort of, for a while, we sort of wanted to get things back together. And over the last half a year, we've managed to do that. We managed to sort of build up that team again. And like, there's different team members this time. Myself and Avi, our time freed up a lot. So we were able to dedicate a lot more time to it. And then a few other people came in. Some we paid salary and some we sort of came in, I guess, more on sort of the founder role. And yeah, that led to the relaunch of Crypto Fighters Alliance, which happened around 3 weeks ago now. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the basic idea there was sort of the original collection was these 2D fighters. And with Crypto Fighters Alliance, we brought them back as 3D characters. The goal being to sort of the original V1 game was like nice, but it was like very simple. And the goal with the V2 was really to build like a much bigger game, a whole universe around it. The quality of art, I would say, is like sort of a step up from sort of like the V1. Also, like budget wise, it was just like it cost us a fair amount more to sort of put everything together. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's sort of where we are with Crypto Fighters Alliance. The mint did happen around 3 weeks ago now, and yeah. It didn't exactly go exactly to plan. We weren't planning to mint out, but we sort of only got around 25% of the way there. So we are in sort of a challenging situation now, trying to decide, you know, what's the best way to move the project forward. We didn't bring in the funds we wanted. And sort of then, I guess, a big part of that as well, which I haven't mentioned, is the refund mechanism. So with Crypto Fighters Alliance, a big push we made was that NFT projects should give more buyer protection for a whole number of reasons. But we basically launched DRC721R with Crypto Fighters Alliance. So everyone that minted basically has 45 days to take a full refund.
Yeah. And this is how I heard about Crypto Fighters first. I mean, I think, you know, that one thread that you guys put out, you know, talking about ERC-721R, I think obviously, you know, hit the algorithm and a lot of people, you know, saw that. I'm looking at it now. It has just over 3,200 likes, 1,500 retweets. You know, I mean, definitely a lot of attention here. So I think this is, you know, it obviously signals some kind of a need or I guess a desire from the community to have more accountability, right? And I think it's a perfect segue into this, I think, you know, now that you're in this position as well with your own project that's, you know, minted out 25% and, you know, knowing that people have the ability still to, you know, get a full refund. And so I'm, you know, curious, I guess, you know, let's hear a bit more about the refund procedure. So I think this is actually, you know, what we wanted to talk about. And how did the idea of building in a refund mechanism into a smart contract come about? And sort of, you know, what was the journey for you guys to get to that point?
Yeah. Yeah, good question. The original inspiration, a bit of a history of refunds. So we also run an NFT analytics platform called Exodia.io. So we used refunds for that. That was basically a project. We had 500 NFTs that we minted for 0.15 Ethereum. That was actually sort of quite a slow mint. I don't remember exactly when, but let's say around half a year ago or so. And the mint lasted around 2 months to sell out. Even though it was a small mint, we didn't mint out sort of on day one. It sort of got like 30% halfway there, and then sort of the rest minted out a bit later. And that's sort of still under active development. Bunch of developers working on it. Like, yeah, very, very much a lot of work going into that to continue making it a good platform. But that's sort of the first time we did it. At the time as well, there was Curious Addies, which is another collection. They did a refund mechanism that was sort of 100 days. With Exodia, it was 14-day refund. Curious Addies, I think, was like maybe the week after they did a 100-day refund mechanism. But in terms of sort of why, so when it originally came up for me was obviously, yeah, Exodia is the first time we did the refunds. And then with ERC-721R, we sort of just gave it a new name for Crypto Fighters Alliance, sort of we figured like rebranding it sort of similar to Azuki did with ERC-721A, we'd just get sort of a lot more attention, keep giving it sort of a solid name like that, basically. Right, so I'm just about to sneeze. Wait.
No worries, man.
Okay, fine, it's gone.
You lost it?
Over the last 2 days, I thought I was getting
it. Oh, gosh, yeah.
Yeah. So in terms of, I mean, answering the question, how it came out. There was a project basically we were helping a few months ago, basically, where the founders basically, over the last years, I've been running a freelance agency because of my sort of like heavy background in NFTs. We also helped a few NFT projects do their launch. And there was a project we were helping, and that sort of like, it was around that time that was like, they were like, oh, why don't you go mint? And, you know, if it doesn't work out, we'll send you the ETH back. And sort of that was, I think, probably when the idea got into my head originally. But yeah, just being following the space quite deeply and sort of seeing everything that's been going on, it just seemed like, you know, we're seeing rug pulls every other day. Like Pixelmon, where you're sort of like selling one thing, the result is something completely different. And sort of the refund mechanism, I guess, is not really that complicated. It's like, it's very, very common in Web 2, you know, or e-commerce, or regular commerce. You buy something off Amazon, it's not what you expected, it's not the quality you wanted, you go into a restaurant, you didn't like the food, like everyone's going to give you a refund, no questions asked. And it's even good for the sort of the seller, it just like builds that trust, you know, you're much more likely to go buy, because it's like, you know, I could always give it back anyway. And probably most of the time people aren't refunding sort of in regular stores, even though they can. It just seemed like very strange that didn't exist for Web3. So that's, I guess, where sort of the main inspiration came from. And then also just the desire to really like be able to stand out from all the other projects and sort of be able to say, okay, we are here for the long run. You know, you're going to have plenty of time to sort of see what you got from us, decide do you like the community or not, do you like the direction things are going. And so I guess originally it was even like less to sort of like stop rug pulls, because I think rug pull projects probably wouldn't use this mechanism, but for all the other projects that sort of want to signal, no, we're definitely not a rug pull, and like we just want to sort of build maximum trust possible with you and like sort of really make it an almost no risk mint for you, that was sort of the real inspiration why, like, I guess I felt so strongly and had to convince my team members like we have to do refunds for Crypto Fighters Alliance as well.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I think, you know, definitely does make a big step in the right direction. I mean, I do have things that I want to, you know, poke at here and sort of, you know, dig deeper with you. But I think, you know, the first impression, obviously, when one thinks about, you know, a refund mechanism or being able to, you know, basically trade your NFT back, obviously that is, you know, massive signal of trust. The team is saying, you know, if you don't like it or if the experience isn't what, you know, you expected based on our marketing, then you can, you know, get your funds back. And I think, you know, to your point, I think that is a, you know, very important thing in this market. I think it is interesting. And, you know, I do wonder how it fits in with, you know, other forms of accountability, because we have seen certain projects where, you know, they have a corporate structure maybe, and they have like a payout system or some kind of like tiered mechanism for, you know, basically incentivizing the founders to stay on and, you know, continue building and stuff. And I think it's interesting, right? Because there can be some level of overlap between these two things. Let's say, you know, rather than 100% refund, maybe you commit 20% of the capital upfront, and then, you know, the rest of it is sort of a tiered refund mechanism. I'm wondering if the contract would allow for that, you know, so let's just take a concrete example. Let's say 20% upfront. So you can get maybe 100% refund in the first like 5 days. And then afterwards you commit 20% for the next 40. And then, you know, it's sort of 10% every 15 days subsequent, something like that. Would that be possible?
Yeah. So for CryptoFight Alliance, it was just sort of 45 days, 100% refund. But I think that the mechanism you're describing, that like we do see that sort of part of ERC-721R as well. And there's even a team called Podium NFT that, yeah, they have a mechanism like that, a vesting schedule, where they released funds 20% every 2 weeks basically gets unlocked. So let's say you decide to refund after 4 weeks, they only sort of, you get a 60% refund. So I think, yeah, mechanisms like that are very, very healthy. I think even probably a better way of doing things, let's say in the case of CryptoFighters, like there was like a decent amount of spend going into it up front that like, it would be very nice to sort of know, okay, you know, at least your initial spend is covered type thing. So let's say a project is going to put in $100,000 into their budget and, you know, they're going to send $2 million. So it could be, okay, well, at least, you know, the $100,000, 5% you unlock immediately. And then, you know, and teams would only get 95% refund, and then it sort of will unlock 10% a month or every 2 weeks, whatever it is. But yeah, I think that's like definitely a very, very healthy way to go. And if I was doing sort of another refund project now, well, I would structure it along those lines.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think it is a good thing because the incentives then are aligned, right? I mean, I think the obvious concern is exactly what you raise, where, you know, if a project were to say, all right, you know, we're going to spend money up front, we're going to spend a lot of time up front, you know, I think there is a very good argument that the founders should take something for what they did deliver, and obviously the work they put in, the expenses they had. And, you know, the biggest concern is really just, did you really get what you paid for, right? I think, you know, Pixelmon's a great example of that. I mean, obviously, I think we've seen, you know, the floor price on that one basically tank faster than I think any other high value project that we've seen in the space. And you know, obviously, the issue for me for something like that is obviously they collect something like 70 million up front, when in reality, they're not actually deploying those funds right away up front, right? And there's really no need to. So in a sense, the model is just super skewed towards being far too friendly for devs and project founders and not really thinking about consumer protection. And I think, you know, that this is definitely something that, you know, moves in the right direction for consumer protection purposes. And, you know, it's just really good to see.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I think that there are certain projects where you sort of, you have that protection in other ways. Let's say if it's like a Moonbirds project, the team has their reputation on the line and sort of like, I don't know, you sort of know that, you know, you give that team $50 million, that they're going to deploy that $50 million into building a big startup because, you know, their mindset on sort of like billion-dollar startup type outcomes anyway. And also they obviously have their reputation behind it if they were just going to sort of run off and rug. But like the level of protection we have for the average NFT project, like, you know, yeah, most projects, you can even give them, I guess, $2 million, even like, I guess, in the case of Zagabond with Azuki, that, yeah, I know it's close to your heart, but even like a project like that, it's like a project people give like quite a large amount of money, and there's just sort of no, you know, they can just sort of move on often. Obviously, that project specifically is like a hot topic right now, but it's like a lot of the time people are expecting, okay, we're giving you $2 million, we're giving you $5 million, whatever the amount is, we do expect some sort of continuation from that moving forward, basically.
Absolutely, you know, and I think, you know, just being objective about that too, like, you know, I get asked about, you know, the whole like doxing thing a lot. And, you know, I think you guys mentioned this in the Crypto Fighters thread, but, you know, like dox teams rug too, you know, and I think as long as you have that baseline level of assurance that, you know, there's some, I think, recourse or some ability to have accountability, then it does help. And I think, you know, specifically dealing with the case of Azuki, obviously if the team was, you know, entirely doxed, I think it would be a different story. But I think if, you know, if they were all undoxed, also, you know, not the best scenario. But I think for me, what kind of did it was Arnold Tsang, the artist, being doxed and obviously being quite a prominent figure with, you know, his resume and such. It is one of those things where, you know, if there is someone that's prominent enough that knows who presumably knows who he's working with. You know, that is also some level of accountability. And, you know, we do see that hybrid model where, you know, you get docs teams and undocs teams. And, you know, I've been on the fence about this too. I mean, it's a tricky subject. And I think people, you know, take a hardline approach, you know, for I believe in doxing or I don't believe in doxing. But, you know, what we kind of saw with, I think, even the Pixelmon fiasco, right, with Cyber not being doxed and such, like, you know, when he did eventually forcefully get doxed, we saw, you know, huge number of death threats and, you know, all sorts of crazy stuff happen. And for me, there's always that balance too of I think there is obviously a desire for people to have that level of accountability, that level of trust. But, you know, at the same time, I think the behavior by some in this space when most other people are doxed also, it does create a question of, is this the best model? Does that solve all the problems? Or do we need something that's a bit more trustless, like, you know, you're introducing with ERC-721R, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I personally feel very first step in the right direction. Yeah, I 100% agree. Like, obviously, yeah, having people know exactly who you are, and even if you have the absolute best intentions, like, things can go wrong. And the death threats, or, you know, there might be a situation where, like, somebody actually acts on that, like, and it's not like doxing is going to solve everything. Like, obviously with Luna right now, it wasn't exactly a rug pull, but like, sort of,
yeah,
Gokon, like, his name is behind it, he's doxed, and obviously there are probably a lot of people that would want to act on that and sort of take vengeance for sort of what he's done. So many suicides, yeah, have happened post that. So definitely sort of in that sense, it for sure doesn't solve everything. And even if you have the right intentions, which whatever, Luna was just crazy and sad story, but it obviously, he's just an arrogant person that just didn't know what he was doing. But it wasn't that, like, sort of the intention was like to sort of burn billions of dollars. It was just sort of the problems were in other areas. So, and that even an NFT founder with good intentions is possible. Sort of all sorts of things could happen. It could be like sort of funds just like get stolen, like beyond their control, or, you know, they raised like a really good project, raises $10 million, and then sort of they lose the funds, and now the you know, there's all sorts of ways sort of, or like, there's so many unknowns that could happen to a team. So yeah, I understand sort of wanting that level of protection, I guess. I would also say on the level of doxing that there's like different levels of being doxed. So there's what Fred by like swanbat.eth, if anyone follows him on Twitter, but like he is like, sort of, you have someone which is like Kevin Rose is sort of like more like a, I don't remember the numbers he puts in, but like a level 4, level 5 dox person, or like I don't know if it was a Kanye West or someone sort of with a big name, they've got sort of a lot more to lose, I guess. Or like, I don't know, maybe some of these celebrities feel like they don't have a lot to lose, like Floyd Mayweather. But in short, sort of, the more prominent your name, the more you have to lose when you are dox. And then there are people like, so just no one knows who they are. They're a 21-year-old, they're just starting their career. It's like, even if they're docs, it's like, well, they don't really have a reputation to lose. They might,
I fully agree with that. And I think that is one of those things where, you know, just being docs doesn't really matter. And I've been in a number of projects too, where, you know, maybe I'm poking my head around a Discord server and then, you know, people dox themselves. And I'm just like, I don't really think that feels like it adds value, you know, like it doesn't really add a ton of value to me. Frankly speaking, I could care less, you know, about who these people are. And I think we haven't really seen enforcement against a doxed individual in this space, as far as I'm aware. You know, I think the Frosties thing, sort of, they found out who the guy was. But as far as I'm aware, obviously, you know, wasn't really doxed and didn't divulge who he was. But, you know, that one was also a very clear case of it being, you know, deliberately a rug pull. Whereas in most other cases, kind of as you described, it's either, you know, due to incompetence of the team, or, you know, people with the best of intentions just not really knowing what they got themselves into or not being able to execute. Or, you know, even more nefarious, you get people to start a project without the intention of really seeing it through, but they, you know, give the impression that they're continuing to build, right? So the whole like soft rug kind of situation. And I think that's also difficult, but, you know, is probably mitigated by a sort of vested system, you know, where you can get tiered refunds over time. And, you know, how long do people want to keep the act up for, really, is the question, right? And I think, it's interesting to see how this stuff plays
out. Yeah, you at least make it much harder if
No, exactly. And I think because there's that level of, you know, consistently needing to deliver, or at least, I guess, demonstrating your ability to execute as well, right? I think that's something good. And I think, you know, on the same vein, like, I think, yet, you know, good faith, honest builders who are putting in time, they deserve a little something, maybe, you know. And I think, again, that's where, you know, the vesting system could be really, really good. They take a little bit up front, but certainly not what we were seeing now, which is, you know, these massive projects mint out, you know, huge amounts, and then people just get a percentage of the mint. I mean, that to me is just wrong. I don't think that's right. I don't think at that point people have done enough to justify taking, you know, that amount of money. But we, you know, and I think we are moving away a little bit from this, at least for, you know, high profile projects. And I think one of the ones that I was really happy to see was, it was the Japanese anime, the retro anime project, Shinsei Galverse. So they had a corporate structure, and I think they had like vesting periods for when the founders would be paid out, just so they're, you know, incentivized to stay on and keep building. And, you know, I was happy to see that. I was happy to see them disclose that. And I think, you know, that's something that we probably need a hell of a lot more of in this space. But, you know, again, I think we're moving in the right direction, which is optimistic. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the Web2 like protections, like, yeah, regular startup like vesting is great. I mean, that's the protection mm-hmm. basically every investor ever has. But yeah, I think that's, and yeah, I guess the Web3 version of that, the trustless decentralized version, is, yeah, building into smart contract.
Yep, no, that makes a lot of sense to me. So I do have a question. So I've been thinking about this sort of all day, you know, prior to, you know, us coming and chatting, because I wanted to see if I could poke some holes in the logic and get your thoughts on this, because I think, you know, it is important to stress test these things, at least at an intellectual level. So one of the things that I thought was, okay, there is a balance here too, right? Because whilst we are concerned about consumer protections, I think even when you think about things from like a regulatory perspective, you know, people say regulation is good for the market when there's a lack of regulation. And I certainly believe that, you know, Web3 could benefit from some regulation. But at the same time, there are people, you know, who say, well, you know, it should be a completely free market, completely open market. Regulation kills things. I think that it's kind of similar when we talk about things like this. Like, there's a balance between how much consumer protection do we bake into everything and how much do we sort of leave it, you know, open market and sort of buyer beware, right? And one of the things that I thought about was, okay, we understand that some holders of projects in this space may not have the same, you know, sophistication as people who are trading equities or people who are, you know, professional traders and stuff. And so I think their fortitude may be tested. And also given the fact that the market is just so much more volatile, there are a lot of things that could potentially be difficult to address by this, right? So let's say, for example, a founding team is all in on build mode. They're sort of heads down working on the project and trying to deliver value. It would obviously take some time for them to be able to deliver anything. And you could argue that by having a refund system, then more time and resource would need to be spent to making sure people don't do a refund or sort of submit for a refund. Because if that did happen, that could cause issues, like kind of like a run on the bank scenario where, let's see, you know, a bunch of people start refunding and then they announce their refunding, and then all of a sudden everyone starts to refund, and then it just creates a really bad PR situation where in reality people could be really good faith building in the background, just not out there describing everything they're doing, you know. So what do you think about that, and is that something that's crossed your mind?
Yeah, for sure, it's an interesting situation. I think it's nice to, let's say, have some of the funds released. Also, it really depends on sort of what the refund period is. I think, like, mm-hmm. even if I saw a project doing a 2-week refund period, I'm like, okay, that, like, it's obviously not gonna protect me from, like, they only need to sort of do 2 weeks of, like, sort of keeping this community up to get all their funds. But at least it would be something. Or if we talk about the vesting sort of scenario, they do get funds sort of immediately unlocked. Like, if we're talking about a successful mint, it could be $1 million, $2 million, $5 million even, then, like, sort of any sort of smallish percent is still going to be, like, sort of probably more than they can spend within, like, whatever that period is. Like, when we're talking about, like, crypto fights, like a very long, like, vesting like unlock period of 45 days, it's like at the end of the day, it's like really not that long. So, like, even like if we're starting to unlock like a few percent a week or 2 weeks after the mint, or even immediately, like, hopefully that would give them enough to be moving in that time. I agree, it does sort of force people to sort of be focused more on the community and sort of like showing what they're doing and like that. But I guess even in my mind, that's a good thing. Like, if the plan was to sort of just like disappear for 6 weeks and sort of just not say anything, that would be a problem. Basically, that is like sort of the things we want protection for. We want, you know, the community, like, put a lot of effort put into the community before the launch happened. Like, we expect that sort of to keep going afterwards. We expect to sort of see things moving. We do want to see things from our founders. And sort of if a project is silent for half a year, like an excuse isn't like, oh, we're building, we're eventually going to launch something in 2 years' time.
As buyers, we
do expect things along the way. But yeah, having said that, you're right. It's like it could be challenging for a team. I think, yeah, each team sort of needs to figure out where they stand and what sort of the best mechanism for them is. I think in for a good project that does sell out, it's very unlikely to see a high number of refunds. Exodia, I think, had under 5% refunds. For Curious Addies, I think it was under 10%. Podium, I think it was like 1-ish%. No one refunded. And then Crypto Fighters Alliance has had like a very large number of refunds, like percentage wise, more than we would have wanted. But the main reason for that is more that we didn't sell out, rather than sort of anything else. And because we didn't sell out, there's no secondary market movement because we didn't sell out, basically. So we're sort of in that spot where people can always mint, and like there's no point selling on secondary, you might as well return it. So we're not going to see the floor dropping below mint price, and we're not going to see secondary market moving while we're in this sort of like open mint phase, which we might close off at some point. But because of that situation, there we did see a much larger of refunds than we would have expected. But I guess, yeah, the goal really would be team does sell out, and then sort of you have like there, I would expect even 25% refund, it would be like quite a high percentage. And hopefully even with the 75% remaining, like they'd still be able to do quite a lot, the team basically.
Yep. No, that makes total sense. And I think 2 points that you raised there that I fully agree with. I think one, you know, if it does push a team to be, you know, better with communications and basically not disappear, you know, for 6 weeks or something, I think that is generally a good thing. I think what we've learned from this very nascent space so far is that, you know, community is a lot with NFTs. And I think to that extent too, I think, you know, having some level of engagement with the community and keeping people involved in the process is also probably a good thing. I mean, obviously you don't want to divulge too much and sort of, you know, take the oomph out of the announcement when it eventually comes, but certainly agree that I think, you know, community upkeep in the interim while you're building is a good thing. And I think also the data that you've provided is it's interesting, right? Because I didn't know that the numbers were so low for those other projects that, you know, did mint out. But that is optimistic, and I think that that's generally a good thing. And it's making me wonder a couple things too, just about the mechanics. I think, first of all, if the NFT is traded on secondary, I assume the refund is no longer, it's no longer eligible for refund.
So it's up to you how you structure the contract. With Crypto Fighters Alliance, it is eligible for refund still, and that's what the core ERC-721R is. We didn't want that situation where it's sort of someone else could buy and then refund. Like if you're already buying on secondary, it's like, I guess we're like, you know, you shouldn't, you know, you bought it off someone else, you didn't buy it off us, you shouldn't get a refund. But in the end, we did allow people to get a refund. And the reason for that, one, it's just extra gas costs in terms of like tracking who the people are that actually bought it to begin with. So that's sort of just like an additional cost we didn't really want to add in. And two, there are certain benefits to, I guess really to protect against the rug, like there's an account, Rug Pull Finder, that brought this up sort of when we originally put out a thread. It was like, you know, there's a ton of like flipping like onto secondary market very quickly. And the reality is if you do that, you'll probably lock out around 70% of refunds potentially immediately. So basically you sort of lost the whole refund protection. You'll probably get access to most of the funds anyway if you block off secondary refunds. And the other part of it is also the refund mechanic, it protects the floor, which is a benefit. And this if you remove refunds from secondary participants, you start to lose that floor protection, basically, where basically instead of selling below floor, people are signaling sort of the project like market cap was too much when they're sort of refunding or like selling below floor. So you lose that protection as well. So for all these reasons, basically, we're in the end for us, even though we didn't want to refund secondaries, in the end, even a secondary market sale is refunded, but obviously not at the secondary market price, at the original mint price.
Yeah. No, I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I think that is what happens with a lot of these things where, you know, I mean, I've even seen discussions where people buy a project and they, you know, you kind of say to them, hey, maybe this kind of looks like a rug, or, you know, this could be a rug. And they're like, yeah, that's fine. I just got to not be holding when they rug. And it's like, Jesus, you know, I think people do kind of take that approach for things. And again, sometimes it is the Wild West out here, right? And I think that is the unfortunate reality of the situation that we're in. So I definitely think that's a good, a good approach and a good option to have baked into the contract. And, you know, on the same vein of that too, like if people are trading on secondary and the royalties go back in, technically there's still a net positive for the team if they're refunding the mint price. Yeah. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And I think the second thing just on mechanics there too is there any optionality for this, or is it one way or the other where if you do a refund, does it go back? Does the NFT go back to sort of the dev wallet, or does it get burned?
Yeah. So I would say you can write the smart contract code as you want. The core of ERC-721 of the intention is that it goes back to the devs. They can continue to sell this at a later date, basically. Like, originally, if they were aiming to sell, I don't know, 10,000 NFTs or 5,000, whatever the number is, like they did intend to bring in funds for that, it might not be that they can bring it in immediately, but later, at a later date, they might be able to bring in the funds. So if the project continues to go well, they can eventually sort of sell them on the market at some point. And I think also if it were to get burnt, there are like annoying situations where someone could sort of mint a lot, refund a lot. It's like, it just sort of, it can mess with the project plans a lot. So in my opinion, much better that it just sort of goes back to the devs and the devs can decide to do what they want with it, basically. Like, I would say usually they should just hold it for a bit. They definitely shouldn't start dumping on the market or just crash the price. But yeah.
No, that makes a lot of sense. I had the same thought too, where, you know, it does help, I think, to just break it down and understand fully how this works. But, you know, I had the same thought where obviously if some of the NFTs are, let's say it's, you know, creative or artistic vision, and some of them may sort of be, you know, part of a bigger picture or story or something that's built around that universe, if they're burned, then that could create issues for the team as well. And obviously, you know, could change rarity on things and you know, just have a lot of unintended consequences. So that does make sense to me for sure.
Yeah.
The other question that I had was, obviously, you know, we're currently in a bit of a wild bear market with everything kind of going to shit, you know, so with a mechanism like this, it does sort of shift. And I'm asking this not because I really have an answer, but more because it's just something that, you know, came to my head. But we are seeing then a mechanism like this would shift more risk into the hands of the project founders, because people may just want liquidity and may not feel comfortable holding, say, an illiquid JPEG, and therefore, you know, would be more likely to submit a request for a refund. And I'm curious to see, like, again, I don't think there's a right or wrong answer. I think this is more an observation, but, you know, it does seem to be an interesting phenomenon in terms of how all of this would interact with the wider market.
Yeah. I mean, we're sitting through that situation right now. When Crypto Fighters Alliance minted, I guess the market was getting worse, but it wasn't sort of this. It was before Luna, it was before Azuki, news, and yeah, but before the whole market started crashing. So like 3 weeks ago, like it was just before the other deed mint. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely having an impact. Also, because we had a fairly long refund period, 45 days in NFT or crypto space, things can change massively, which we've seen happen. Going from that, then there are definitely people, I think, that wanted to be part of the project, and they wrote in Discord, yeah, you sort of need to become liquid, and they're looking to pull out their assets or the high risk investments, which I sort of think NFTs definitely are on the higher risk side. Mm-hmm. And people refunded for that reason. In my opinion, that's completely fine. I'm even like happy that, you know, I could give people a way out. They're like, they're feeling the pressure. They wanted their liquidity back, and they had a way to do that, basically. Like sort of founders, I think like for, it's especially like difficult, interesting when you're like sort of doing this, that switchover. I think if you were going to do a mint now, like it'd probably be as good a mechanism as any. Like, that people are more likely to mint just because of the protection. They can sort of see how things are going. It's almost a no risk mint. You just sort of have to pay gas costs. So in terms of that, I mean, I'd still say it's a good mechanic during a bear market, because, you know, if you are looking to give users more of a reason to mint, basically, and like sort of remove those questions, should I not, If it's sort of like a 50-50 mint beforehand, it's probably a mint you're going to go do just because, like, well, worst case scenario, I'll just return. So I still think even during this market, like, it's sort of a good thing to do, basically.
Yeah, no, I think that makes total sense. And I think, to be honest with you, I do hope to see this gain some traction because I do think it, you know, will protect against a lot of things. And I think, you know, the way that I see it is the potential for this is that it could end up being something that does signal, like you've said, like a level of trustworthiness and a level of, you know, the team wanting to be accountable. So what are your plans to take this forward and you know, how do you want to grow this and scale it basically?
Yeah. It's a really good question. Initially, like, I mean, we have been looking to push ERC-721R, like, sort of to whoever will sort of listen about it. Originally I was like, oh wow, everyone knows about it. There's like sort of been threads that went viral half a year ago. There's our thread went viral now, like sort of the thread you mentioned before, that was like completely organic. There's no like bots or anything around it. It got mentioned in every single news publication, like if it's Coindesk, Defiant, like Delphi Digital threads, whatever it was, just all over the place, Yahoo, other places. So many newsletters. And then I also realized, wow, like no one actually knows what ERC-721R is. I'm speaking to like, you know, people like sort of somewhat like connected to our community, owning the V1 fighters and didn't even know about it, type thing. And like, and every person I speak to about it is like, I do realize, okay, I've actually got to push this idea out a bit more. I guess one viral thread isn't enough. It's sort of people hearing about it again and again and again, or even like, I guess the first time, just even though I thought people heard about it, just, yeah, people like maybe glanced at it and then sort of moved on. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's definitely like, we're trying to get more awareness for it as a whole. I would say it wasn't like originally going into it, it was like, we're going to use this mechanic ourselves because we think it's important, but it was less about like, you know, making everyone aware of it. And like, just like, you know, just making this, I did want it to be a standard for the space as a whole, but I'm not sure I necessarily saw myself in the position where sort of even after I'm in, it was like sort of ERC-721R stands on its own as something we want to push beyond, let's say, just your crypto project, yeah, by itself or Exodia by itself. Yeah. And it is an interesting question, sort of where it goes moving forward. We do have like, the goal really was sort of like, okay, here's the code, use it if you want, sort of like Kazuki with ERC-721A. Mm-hmm. But there have been sort of teams or groups approaching us, like even like an investor is like, oh, you should like, you know, you should do something with ERC-721R, turn it into like a big company. And then like, I'm not sure if there is like really that potential, but like there are sort of things where we're thinking about, like, I don't know, can we sort of do even more sort of, could there be a launch pad around like platform, like projects that use sort of the exact mechanics we want in terms of transparency, in terms of vesting, like if you launch through this launch pad, you know, you'll get, you know, this sort of like ERC-721R, whatever we think are sort of best practices, or, you know, maximize accountability and also like sort of protect buyers, protect sellers. And anyway, but yeah, we'll have to see. In terms of like short term, the goal is really like, you know, we're focused on basically like crypto fighters and Exodia, and like we have some big decisions to make around crypto fighters coming up, exactly sort of how we move things forward, because the original roadmap we put out, but just sort of that's not viable at all, and sort of the team we have on, we're not able to sort of keep paying their salaries basically for anyone that isn't a founder. So yeah, right now I am more focused on sort of, yeah, the other things, but like I do, like every opportunity I do have to push the ERC-721 forward, I will take it. In terms of the code, like, we'll continue to improve it, and like things like the vesting mechanic that the Podium team put out, move that into the GitHub repo. And yeah, that's sort of like the short term, at least for ERC-721.
Yeah, no, I think that makes a lot of sense. And I think, you know, two of the things you brought up there are kind of are things that I've been saying, you know, a lot. But I think this space obviously is an attention economy. And so even when things get a lot of attention, you know, people forget very quickly because we all have shiny object syndrome. There's always the next thing to look at. And so I totally agree. I think, you know, it does take a concerted effort in a sense to keep the narrative going. And the second thing was, you know, just a thought that I had, and you know, I've been thinking a lot about how to regulate this space properly, because, you know, I think eventually some regulation will come in, but at the same time, it's obviously just the fact that the space operates so different from, you know, the traditional Web 2 model that, you know, I do think a lot of the regulation and a lot of the consumer protection will have to kind of come from the community and be in this kind of trustless fashion. So I do see things such as, you know, ERC-721R as things that, you know, could kind of take that responsibility and sort of do that for the community, you know, and hopefully it does get some adoption. I think it'll be tricky. I sort of off the top of my head think that a lot of project founders probably would not be willing to take it on, you know, but I think if it becomes one of those things where it does become a bit more ubiquitous and people are aware that this exists and sort of, you know, people call for it almost, then I think that's where we get a big shift in terms of, you know, how people approach this, right?
Yeah, 100%. I think also maybe one major project taking it on, if it's like a Gary V project, then maybe it doesn't even need that mechanic, but like the one like major name doing it, or like very popular project, I think that could sort of, and people seeing that it works well, I think that could like sort of like massively move something like this forward. I also think like it's not necessarily needed for every project. I think there are projects where you know exactly what you're getting ahead of time. It's a piece of art that isn't utility there. And like, you know, when there are people screaming, I'm forgetting the guy's name, but the guy that takes like the photographs from up high.
Oh, yes. I forget his name too, but I know exactly who you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, so I remember him tweeting about like people asking me for utility. There isn't one. There's no roadmap. Like, you bought the photo. It's like, it's sort of clear what you bought. Like, well, what did you expect to happen next? You know, did you want staking on this photo? And then the whole thing doesn't make like a lot of sense. So that case like that, I don't think like when you know exactly what you paid for ahead of time, like, you know, there's nothing really like that you found out afterwards that could like sort of really warrant a refund. So in those cases, I think probably not relevant. Mm-hmm. But for a lot of projects, the idea is you raise $5 million, you have a roadmap, you're actually going to go build things with this. In those cases, yeah, I think like vesting is like, or refunds vesting is like just super, super important, and is what you would expect from a regular startup.
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely right. I think the guy, his name is Drift. We're talking about Drift, right?
Yeah, Drift.
Yeah. That's right.
I was going to say Drift, but yeah, it's Drift.
Yeah, no, I totally get it. It's funny because I think there are some projects that just don't need this level of utility, but it's almost like a meme where people just everything, you know, they want a native ERC-20, you know, token, and they want, you know, utility and stuff. And it's like, man, you know, sometimes it really is just about the art, right? I mean, especially for people that are doing something so unique. It's interesting. Something that just also crossed my mind, which is... what you guys have proposed with ERC-721R really is a truly Web3 type of thing, because, you know, Kickstarter doesn't have a mechanism like this, right? Where if, you know, the project is funded, then they just get all the money up front and then they deliver you a thing. But I mean, I don't know if you use Kickstarter at all, but I've had so many experiences on Kickstarter where I feel like I got rugged, you know, where you buy something and it comes to you like 6 months late. And it's not nearly what you expected. And, you know, the team isn't super transparent and stuff. And again, fully doxed and everything. But, you know, nothing like this exists. And perhaps this is a very uniquely Web3 solution, you know?
Yeah. I can imagine. Yeah, it's an interesting I think the comparisons to Kickstarter are very good. I think at the end of the day, there's like limits how much we can sort of really protect. I think in the Kickstarter case, it wouldn't be fair at all, make sense. So let's say, it could well be like that project got funded for $1 million. They went and produced it, and if it wasn't what you expected, if they got mass refunds, just like the team wouldn't be able to afford it. So I think like in a situation like that, it's like dangerous and sort of that's why I don't think like there should be refunds for a project a year afterwards, type thing. Like after they've already invested a lot of time and energy to make things work, but at least let's say that. At the beginning, I think basically, and I think also teams raising a lot more than sort of is what is needed. So there is that sort of like leeway. And I think also they're more likely to raise more anyway with the refund mechanic. So I don't really see that the founders are like losing out too much. I think if anything, it's probably just bringing in more sales for them that they might not have had already. But yeah, the interesting thing is sort of about the Kickstarter Indiegogo comparison as well. If you don't raise the full funds for the project, I think, is it on Kickstarter? If you don't raise the full funds, then sort of all funds are returned?
I think it's for both. If they hold it in escrow, and then, you know, only if they hit the funding goal, then, you know, it gets paid out. And I think they have like stretch goals too, if they raise extra and stuff. And, you know, I agree with you though. I mean, I don't think it's necessarily, you know, a one-to-one comparison. I think obviously all of those people are doxed, and you still do get a product at the end of the day. So, you know, even if that product may not be worth as much as you think, I think that's, you know, it doesn't really require necessarily the same thing. But, you know, I think when we're talking about ownership of an ERC-721 token on the blockchain, then, you know, that may come from a completely undoxed team. I think it's a different value proposition, you know?
Yeah. And the interesting thing when you don't get the full refund, it sort of they do have sort of like, when the project doesn't hit its goals, the money is returned, which is sort of like also interesting. It's sort of the situation we're in right now, where, you know, we were looking to raise, let's say, around $2 million, or let's say at least $1 million plus. And we got into a situation where we had only sold around $500,000, and now price of Ethereum dropping, then refund. So it's actually a lot less by now. And it does put us in a situation where we sort of feel like that Kickstarter position where, you know, the vision we had, the goals we had, it's just not doable in this situation. And yeah, we're like, well, I mean, for ourselves, there is a situation where in a few weeks time, we're like, you know, we're not able to sort of produce what we were trying to sell, basically. And like even though it's going to hurt us tremendously, there might be a situation where you even have to sort of tell the community this is a situation, like, we encourage a refund a week before the end type thing, or a few days before. But yeah, those are sort of some big decisions we need to make, if it makes sense. But for sure, the initial goals basically just are undoable, basically.
Absolutely.
Based on the changing fundraising amount we took in.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And listen, man, like, I've really enjoyed speaking to you about this, because I feel like, you know, I really do hope that something like this sees a bit more widespread adoption, even if not as a ubiquitous standard, as at least one that people, you know, seriously consider when there is a use case for it. And then, you know, so I'm just curious, before we wrap up, if there's anything else that you wanted to cover on the topic.
There are common questions that keep coming up, I think we've gone through it enough. I mean, hopefully people have a decent idea of ERC-721 at this point. I guess the one thing, if people are listening, sometimes it's like just a very common question, like, if people are listening, this always comes up, and they think it's sort of a killer question for refunds. But the common question you hear is, like, what happens in a situation where people basically go and mint and they only refund the non-rares? Basically, they keep all the rares and they refund the non-rares.
Right.
So, I mean, in short, like, the answer that we always give to that is that basically what happens on a ton of other projects. People do refund the non-rares, just they sell them on the market way below mint price. And in short, this isn't a healthy situation for the project. I wouldn't say that's a good thing. This is a bad thing when sort of the mint price, the floor price has dropped, you know, to 50% of the mint price within a few days of mint. And if anything, like ERC-721, this is an advantage of it. Clearly, the market is signaling the market cap was too high. We couldn't sort of take in this level, you know, the level of funds that came in here, like the project couldn't hold it, basically. And instead of having those refunds below mint price, you protect the floor and it actually stays at sort of mint price. And the reality as well is, like, a lot of people, like, you know, if they bought into the project, it's not about the rares and the non-rare. Like, for some people it is, but in short, it's like, if anything, sort of what is often considered like a very strong question, I feel like this is one of the major advantages for using ERC-721, or rather than a disadvantage. Of course, refunds just don't even have an impact. If the floor price is suddenly 3x the mint, even non-rares don't make sense to refund. It's more when sort of mint and floor price are at very similar levels, that's when you might consider refunding.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. And I think that's an astute point. I mean, I think, you do see people that accumulate a ton and sort of, you know, dump below the floor or wherever it's at and stuff. But I think, it makes total sense. And I think a lot of people who may just want to be a part of the project or have exposure to the project, you know, being able to scoop one maybe after, you know, it's refunded or something, or, you know, if it's trading on secondary and stuff, like, I think that's also not a terrible thing. And again, I think it comes back to the same idea of legitimate projects that do deliver value will still be able to make it through all of that. You know, I think it's mostly the projects that maybe don't have as much substance or don't have that much confidence within the community that might suffer. And maybe that's, you know, to some extent for good reason, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Ellie, well, please tell people where they can find you on socials and things.
Yeah. So I'm Ellie22242s on Twitter. You can join our Discord, Crypto Fighters Exodia. Welcome to find me there, DM me on Discord as well. Yeah, those are sort of the two core places you'll find me online right now. You can Google my name as well, Ellie Steinbock. You'll find a decent amount about me. You'll find my LinkedIn and so on as well. I am quite doxed.
Quite doxed, I love it. No, and for sure, and we'll link to all of that in the show notes.
Maybe two doxed. I feel like you find everything about me.
Oh man, but I, you know, again, I want to reiterate, I love what you're doing. I love that you're fighting the good fight, and I think, you know, we do need more people that are vocal supporters and champions of things like this. So I, you know, I really appreciate what you're doing, and I hope that we continue the conversation going forward.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right. Thanks for coming on, brother.
Yeah, it was great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. All right. Till next time.